So recently, Kate from the Morgulon's Gospel episodes, if you haven't heard them yet, go back and listen. Also, actually, before you listen to those, listen to Life and Death with Morgulon's and then the Gospel episodes, and it'll all make sense, sort of. But anyway, Kate sent me a video from a company called Siemens Healthineers. They're a cutting-edge billion-dollar medical biotech company.
The digital patient twin. A digital likeness of an actual human, built from millions of data points and created by artificial intelligence. This is still a vision of the future.
That's not what my digital twin says.
But at Siemens Healthineers, we think patient twinning could be a key component in a number of pioneering breakthroughs in healthcare. Why? Well, because it could help sick people get back to their normal lives in the shortest possible time. Or ideally, it could prevent people from getting sick in the first place.
And we're all gonna live forever. Doesn't that sound nice?
We know that sounds like a big dream, but let's take a look at how it might actually work. Of course, it's all about data. A patient twin will be constructed from a person's long-term medical history and their digital patient record. Data from medical exams and sensors like wearable devices
or implantable sensors or injectables
will update this information by providing medical and lifestyle data in real time. AI algorithms will continuously match this data with comparable data sets. They will create simulations, for example, on the patient's future health status.
And according to our data, you should be dead by April 1st, 2041.
Thanks.
And provide actionable insights that can be used for decision support. The patient twin can never be a standalone solution. It will only work as part of an ambient network of digital twins.
Hang on, did she just say an ambient network of digital twins? Is that the hive mind?
Whether it's twins of patients, physicians, or even digital twins of medical devices.
Okay, so not only do you have a million copies of Crystal Clear, her Morgulons also have a million copies of themselves? What?
For medical devices, this network would enable a personalized, automated configuration. So all settings would automatically fit the specific needs of the patient to minimize unwarranted variations.
Unwarranted variations? What do you mean, like individuality? Thanks, I'll keep mine and my soul.
What advantages would patient twinning technology have for the individual patient? The patient twin continuously monitors the health and lifestyle data of the real person.
Lifestyle data, huh? Mission Control reporting to Mission Control. She is smoking a cigarette again after unprotected sex. Permission to administer 5 electric shocks?
It could present the data obtained from evaluations and simulations in a way that is easy to understand. This information could give the real person an impetus to adjust their lifestyle or go for a medical checkup, so the technology can empower patients to self-manage their health.
If the price of my health comes at the cost of my privacy and freedom, I am ready to go out of this world. Hit me. Hit me with the oncovirus called COVID-19. Hit me with a heart attack. You can put me under cardiac arrest.
Give me some of that Delta variant.
Rather be dead than to be constantly tracked and finger wagged and told what to do by a goddamn ambient network of digital twins. They say that this digital twin can alert the emergency services and friends and family if you're in a bad medical situation. Yeah, so basically my whole family, if I get in a car wreck, is going to get a text.
Crystal Clear's digital twin OnStar program.
She has been involved in a motor vehicle crash. Her pulse rate is 54 and rapidly dropping. Her chances of survival are slim to none. I mean, it's like, what? What? What kind of insane, control-obsessed clown would ever think that an ambient network of digital twins is something that's acceptable, that it's worth the trade-off? I mean, is the goal to never get sick? Well, then the goal is to never again be human. We are mortal beings. And they say that matter cannot be created nor destroyed, only transformed. Which I guess in a way would support digitization of me, but I kind of find your digitization of me dehumanizing. In an ambient network on a digital earth.
The people who work at this company, this German company, call themselves Healthineers.
Like Rocketeer? Like what?
This is all about control. This is all about conformity. This is all about restriction. This is all about outlawing fucking jokes and music. That's what these totalitarian pseudo-do-gooders and philosopher king wannabes,
autocrats and kleptocrats, would have us believing is a utopia. It's a digital dystopia. I'm okay with living in the analog space as, yes, I will get sick. Yes, I will die.
Perhaps in a few thousand years, for I am an ageless immortal and an international sex symbol.
Yes, you guessed, and we've got a guest. I'm Crystal Clear, and this is the podcast More Morgulons. Like herpes and Morgulons, I just won't go away. Now don't you go away. Stay tuned.
Yo, look into the common forms of Bartonellosis. Look at Bartonella insulae, Bartonella quintana, Bartonella Elizabethan, I think, is another one. There's many more that aren't Bartonella bacilliformis, which is rarer and deadlier. And these other ones are very typical. I forget what the numbers are, but a huge percentage of cats carry them. I left a message a little bit ago, but I'm doing some more reading about Morgellons right now. I'm going to read this paragraph. Although spirochetal infection appears to be the key etiologic factor in Morgellons disease evolution, Morgellons disease patients have a high incidence of other co-infecting tick-borne diseases, with Babesia infection being most frequently reported. Other pathogens have been detected directly in Morgellons disease dermatological specimens, although less frequently and less consistently than Borrelia. These pathogens include the co-infecting tick-borne pathogens Bartonella hensilae and rickettsia, and the common human pathogens Helicobacter pylori, H. pylori, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So, it talks about Bartonella again. Now, Bartonella is extremely hard to test for, extremely hard to pick up on any type of testing.
Good old Bartonella. Man, it's been a long time since I've talked about Bartonella on this show. Go back and check out Bartonellosis. I think I have an episode about that. I mean, by now I should have an episode about pretty much every fucking thing. I mean, I've gone over Mugolons, Lyme, Bartonella, Bergdorf Fairy, all of them. And I still fail to see what in God's name a bacteria has to do with Morgellons, but I don't know. You're right. Maybe these are common co-infections. I know I don't have any of these co-infections. No one I've ever talked to has tested positive, I think, for Lyme that has Morg, but, you know, that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It just means that that information is not available to me. But let's dive in. Let's look at the Bartonellas, shall we?
This is Bartonella hensilae, the mastermind behind cat scratch fever. Yep.
This is the one you get when you rescue animals that would rather live outside.
It's not just a cutesy name. The infection can cause some serious symptoms like swollen lymph nodes, fever, and fatigue. Then there is Bartonella quintana, which brings a whole different kind of party. Historically known as the cause of trench fever during World War I, it's spread by body lice and can cause severe headaches, bone pain, and a high fever. It's like the bacteria decided to throw a rave in your body, and you definitely didn't RSVP to this one. And these bacteria are sneaky, though they don't always make a grand entrance with symptoms. Sometimes they just chill out, leading to chronic infections that can be hard to diagnose.
They're like that awkward guest at a party who doesn't make a scene but refuses to leave, and you have to figure out a way to politely show them to the door.
Diagnosing these infections can be a bit of a detective game, often involving blood tests or even PCR to amplify and detect the DNA of the bacteria. Treatment usually involves a course of antibiotics, but these bacteria can be stubborn, sometimes requiring a longer treatment to fully evict them from your system. Bartonella vinsoni, subspecies rupensis and Burkhoffi are particularly noteworthy. These guys are more like the loners of the group, typically associated with animals, but occasionally deciding to mingle with humans, leading to endocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart's inner lining, and other systemic infections. Bartonella
alsatica, a rare guest primarily associated with rabbits but capable of infecting humans, causing bacteremia, which means sepsis, and endocarditis. It's like that rare collectible you hear about but never think you'll encounter. Then there's Bartonella elizabethae. This one is known for causing endocarditis in humans. It's like the bacteria decided to go straight for the heart, quite literally. It's often associated with exposure to rats, making it a less welcome visitor in urban settings. Then there's Bartonella grahami and Bartonella tayloriae. These are less commonly associated with human disease, but have been implicated in cases of neuroretinitis and fever with bacteremia, respectively.
All right, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. Babesia. Babesia. I've heard a lot about this one. Babesia is kind of like the less talked about cousin of malaria. It's known for crashing your red blood cells party without an invite. It's a tiny parasite that gets chauffeured around by ticks, particularly the Ixodes scapularis tick. It's often on the same Uber pool ride that Bergdorf Ferry is catching, so not a good carpool, to say the least. The thing about Babesia, here's the kicker. You might not always know if Babesia has gate-crashed your bloodstream. Some folks can carry this parasite and not show any symptoms, walking around like nothing's wrong, while Babesia is having a silent disco in their red blood cells. But when Babesia decides to turn up the volume, that's when you definitely know something's up. Symptoms can range from mild to severe, and they have a flair for the dramatic. We're talking fevers that spike like a suspenseful horror movie, chills that make you think you're in the Arctic, sweats that could rival a sauna session, and fatigue so heavy it feels like you're wearing a suit of armor. And if Babesia really wants to make its presence known, it can cause hemolytic anemia. That's when it starts breaking down your red blood cells faster than a metal band trashes a hotel room, leading to jaundice, that's when you turn yellow, and dark urine. It's like your body is putting up neon signs saying, hey, something's seriously not right here. Diagnosing Babesia involves peering into your blood samples under a microscope, looking for the telltale signs of Babesia having a party, or using PCR tests to catch its genetic RSVP. Treatment usually involves a combo of antimicrobial drugs to crash the party for good. So while you might not always know if Babesia is lurking in the shadows when it decides to make a grand entrance, it's hard to ignore. So here's a couple things I want to say about bacteria in general as co-infections or causative agents that are associated with Morgulons. I don't know about you, but there was a time period, a pretty long time period, where I was taking an insane cocktail of antibiotics. Thank you, Chewy, the veterinary site that sold me a lot of fish antibiotics back in the day. Not that I would recommend that. It's not effective. It's a waste of money. And it's illegal. So do not, I repeat, order fish antibiotics from the internet. Trust me, it is not worth it. But there was a time when I was taking so many freaking antibiotics that I don't care what the hell's in my system. It is dead now. And I still have Morgulons. Think about all the people out there who've been taking antibiotics for years. Tons of antibiotics. Every antibiotic under the sun. Do they still have Morgulons? Yep. So while it might be a co-infection for some people, every single person I've talked to on this show has tested negative for Lyme disease. And I don't know of too many people who've tested positive with any of those other pathogens. Although I get where you're coming from. I've had these weird, looking transient temporary stretch mark striations, indentions in my skin that is associated with that Bartonella henseli. So who the fuck knows? I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I'm just a psych nurse and a nursing leader. I do not get into the nitty gritty of the itty bitty. And by the way, that's the other piece of this that's never made sense to me. If it's bacterial in its origin, then what the fuck are these Morgulons? Bacteria you cannot see with the naked eye. I can see Morgulons with my naked eyes for the most part. I wish it was that simple. If you have these conditions, these co-infections, treat them. By all means, treat them. But I don't. And I don't think it has anything to do with Morgulons. Not in my case. And most of the people I've met doesn't seem to have much to do with theirs. But you may be onto something. I'd love to hear more. If you want to talk,
give me another call or send me an email, moremorgalons@gmail.com, or click the link in the show description. And this time, leave me your name and number, my darling. I'd love to speak with you. But I completely understand if you don't want to. And I respect and support that as well. And I'm very thankful for your messages. I will think more about it. I may have more to say on it on another episode. Anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for being a part of this. We're doing something here. I don't know what the fuck it is, but we're doing something, and it's positive. All right. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.